Hello and welcome to the Dive presented by Honda Season 5, Episode 29.
29!
I only did that because Zale's not here and he likes it when the numbers are 29!
I don't know how that got picked up, but...
Is big for us. Freak is back. Welcome, my friend.
I'm here. It is me, David Freak Turley.
How's your week been, buddy? Well, you got the cast with me, so it's awesome.
Cast with you. And then we got Loss, Win, Win, and Clash, and which is only fifth, sadly. And now I'm here with you again, so it's really short turnaround.
Yeah, a bit of a roller coaster there for your week then.
Freak has been systematically giving everyone on the dive food poisoning so he can take our spot.
That's me. I've just...
Azale was this week. I guess I'm next week or something.
Azale's not on vacation, though. He's not sick this time. Last time he was.
I may have still given him food poisoning.
It's really cruel to give someone food poisoning while they're on vacation.
I got food poisoning on vacation, actually, most recently.
Really?
Yeah. It wasn't bad. I can barf my brains out for a night. Yeah,
I've got connections.
Yeah,
in the
like a delayed time release on it. It was like the middle of my trip.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I learned this recently by looking at YouTube yesterday, and it must be true because the doctor said it. It's usually not the meal you just ate that gave you food poisoning. You usually think one extra meal back, and that's usually about the right timing because it takes you a while to like digest food.
I thought it was lunch. I ate lunch. The lunch that I ate was like these little corn dogs, like little mini corn dogs.
I would never do that to corn dogs. Corn dogs are a sacred food.
I'm pretty sure they
are. They're sandwiches on a stick.
I'm pretty sure they made me sick.
So we got a Twitter question.
Good start.
From my friend Pockets over here. And Pockets was wondering that since the all-pro teams were released, and this is the first time in a very long time, I would say actually ever.
I can't think of another time.
I think it's, according to Reddit, it was the first time ever.
I'm saying never ever. Wrong. So me plus Reddit is like, that's 100%.
God has one.
This zero is the and first one.
This is the first time that we have had an all-pro team. First all-pro team consisting of five different teams, you know, adding players to the roster.
Yep. It's also interesting because every player from all-pro is just from those five teams. Like, there's just no one from Six Below in any of those ballots in most cases. But I think it's really cool, right? Because it clearly is our most competitive playoffs so far. Like, I think just by far, it's like any of those top five teams, you're like, yeah, I could totally see Cloud9 or TL or so-and-so winning the whole thing, which is awesome to see. It's just so wide open. And the fact that it's a strong point from somewhere else, right? Where it's like, oh, yeah, like... I'm trying to remember who's, yeah, like Jizuke, yeah, he really, really stands out as the best mid laner. It's like, oh yeah, and you know, Fudge had really, really stood out as the best player on Cloud9.
And I feel like people were giving Core JJ a lot of shade in the thread about how him getting first team. And I think, you know, you can say maybe he shouldn't have gotten first team, but I think the overall point of the spread of players from different teams does speak to the current state of league in North America, or at least of the regular season, how volatile it was, where your finalists are now in your fourth, fifth spot out of nowhere. You know, EG flies up the standings, 100 Thieves flies up the standings, TSM's been consistent the whole time. So, like, I feel like that does make sense in my head that you would have this very versatile or, you know, made up of a lot of different parts in the All Pros, just with looking at how the regular season went.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't had any single dominant team. Nobody has, you know, complete faith in one team, and there have been areas of weaknesses for all of them. So it makes sense that the ones with strengths made it up there.
Yeah.
Now, for our Honda MVP question, though, because this plays right into it.
Yeah.
Okay. Who do you think is actually the most snubbed? I had a lot of my votes get on there. There are definitely a lot that I actually had in different orders, but support to me was the toughest role. And so my answer is also very similar to Freak. I said Ignar and Sword Art were the two most snubbed. But yeah, what about your Sword Art point?
Yeah, so I mean, real quick, I just want to just set the stage real quick because none of us gonna have the graphic in front of them at home. So I wrote down who was missing from the top from All Pro for the top five teams. So Someday in the TL top lane is missing from top lane. The EG and TL players missing from the jungle role. Person Jensen missing from the mid lane. Zven and Lost missing from bot lane. I'm not including King here.
Yeah.
And Sword Art and Ignar are missing from top three All Pro and support.
So and you like, said TL and EG players for where there were substitutions. Basically.
Yeah, so it's like right, neither TL jungler and neither EG jungler is on there. Now contracts had four regular season games, but like he was undefeated.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like he's actually really, really good. Alfari, of course, didn't play a lot of games either. Yeah. So in most cases, it was any time there were swaps, they just weren't on the list anymore. The one exception being Sword Art and Ignar actually played all the games and also weren't on the list. I think Lost is actually a reasonable choice to be, you know, in fifth or whatever. But yeah, like Sword Art was my number one all pro. Again, Zven is a really good option. The EG jungle is a good option. And Alfari played the season. I think he would have been on there.
I'd say my only other one besides Ignar and Sword Art was going to be Sven. I actually did vote Sven onto All Pro Team. I forget which one it was. It was either two or three. Maybe it was three.
There for me too.
I think it was three. But yeah, he didn't actually even make it on. And so I would, that would be my other snubbed.
Yeah. I also feel like sometimes the difference of the people is like, I forget what it was. I think it was support between second and third. It was like super, super close. And I think that I almost think that's sometimes more interesting to see than just who they are in the teams. But like, I think the support position was the one that was like by far the least on the list of the total points gotten of the first team. He's like, everyone else was like 100 plus, apart. I'm pretty sure. And like, I think, yeah, I think Core JJ had there, like 68.
There's 67 for Core JJ. Second place, who he is, 61. And then apart, Vulcan was 57. So they're all around that mark. For context, though, the, you know, Spica for jungle got 127.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what
he literally got double. He got more than double.
Yeah.
So people who are like, oh my God, Core JJ got first All Pro, you know, it's like, well, realistically, they're all within like a couple points of each other. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I do think, you know, sometimes that is a better way to look at it for me, at least, when I'm like, okay, yeah, this guy won first place, but it was really close in the support position.
Yeah.
Yep. So who is your?
Oh, Ignar. Definitely.
Ignar?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ignar.
I feel like Ignar had a really good split.
It was good.
Yeah.
I will actually chime in a negative point real quick. I think Danny was overrated.
Yeah.
But I would not put him as second best AD carry in the league. I think there's no way he's second best.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would say he's going to win rookie of the split or rookie of the year.
He is my third vote for rookie of the year, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
You have okay. So you probably put a Blaze off, but then who's the other one?
Can you guess?
I would
Revenge?
Oh no, there's someone obvious after Revenge. Like, oh, Neo.
Nope.
Oh, Jenkins, Bob Jenkins. I put Jenkins in as well.
Yeah,
Jenkins, but it's because he didn't play as many games. I think that's why a lot of people didn't vote for Jenkins. But yeah, I also put Jenkins.
Well, that's an interesting part about it too, because Blaze Olive played more. It's rookie of the year this time around, not rookie of the split. Blaze Olive played both, but
the most of any.
Summer wasn't exactly great. Not his fault necessarily.
Yeah, spring was pretty rough.
They only got three wins, but you know, like, does that hurt his case that he played all year, or would it be better if he just showed up in summer like Danny and had this performance? I feel like it actually hurts him in a lot of voters' eyes that he and Golden Gardens kind of sucked in spring.
Yeah, but yeah, my view basically was that like I think like Tactical overall had a better summer split specifically than Danny. So like that's second and third, by the way, second and I think not even third for me in All Pro. But yeah, it's like Blaze Olive was very, very good. I think he was my number one. He's my number three All Pro mid laner, by the way. I think he was just better than the other guys after POE and Jizuke, or Abadaga and Jizuke, I think was the list for me. So I put him over POE.
So that's interesting.
Yeah, that's just like, I just believe really highly in him. And okay, maybe that's kind of an XD, but like his champ pool is better. Like I understand that's not a popular opinion, right? But his champ pool is way better, for example, right? So it's defending that.
I disagree on his champ pool being way better.
Okay.
I think it's been over scrutinized as far as the, like, you know, taboo of putting POE on melee champions and stuff like that.
Okay.
Maybe.
Fine.
Go ahead, Mark.
I voted POE third as well, but I also think based off how the meta was, I mean, they played a different style. And I mean, I still think he played that style really well. I think like when you look at POE and you see these, like for me statistically, low 4%, low CSD and all these things, but then you look at the matchups that he's electing to play, it's like, all right, you're not really trying to win lane in most of these. Like you're Victor into Lucian and you're, you know, gonna outscale the Lucian.
Okay,
type.
I'm just gonna go to bat to be for POE.
No
here.
I'm defending him here. I'm saying that like the stats that you would use to neg him to put him in a negative light,
it's
I'm saying
style.
Like are largely explainable by this style that he's playing.
Okay. A Blaze Olive, 25% win rate on Viego. He did have a 66% win rate on Lee Sin with the three Lee Sin games. And he actually had that one really good game where he had the impressive
Kench.
Kick. Tom Kench one. Okay, you actually get credit for early adaptation. You know, he was one of the first
I've never
ones.
Seen POE play Tom Kench, man.
But he was playing it against Yasui, and Yasui literally inted that kill in mid, Akali going into the tower range.
I saw an outplay. I don't know what you're talking about.
That was a rage Akali second R. That's R2. You don't have to. There's no world where you have to do that. And everyone's like, oh my God, Ablaze is insane. He just solo killed this idiot at his tower. I'm like, yeah, because he just towered though for no reason. Tom Kench had great health on.
I'll give you that.
And so,
anyways,
I mean, that was a little bit overrated, but it's not like, oh my God, Ablaze has this way better champ pool that like plays these melees so much more successfully.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately if the read really is, and this is certainly up for debate, and normally I'm anti the meta, but let's entertain it. The read I've seen from a lot of, you know, very intelligent people, you know, analysts and coaches in the scene is like, hey, the game really is very early game focused because one of the big causes is fight optimization is way better in this season, right? And if you go back and watch last year's Damwon, it's like, okay, well, Kanyon and Showmaker with like Lucian mid are just like lane dominant and they snowball the game from early pressure. Then if you play it right, you can't come back from that. And, you know, TL versus Cloud9 is our recent example from playoffs where it's like, hey, take a dominant mid laner, take a, you know, early aggressive jungler, you know, go win your top lane as well and just like crush top side and then pay back the rest of your map afterwards, right? And we saw like River Shen from TL for the fourth game, for example. And if this is truly actually the best play style, because itemization says, hey, fighters are the best one item champs in the game and the best two item champs in the game because, hey, mages, you know, aren't getting the early magic pin Oblivion orb, right? Like, mage optimization got different, right? Like, important items are now missing from the pool that were good in 2020 and don't exist in 2021. If the read is actually optimal League of Legends, just doesn't have mages frequently anymore because itemization changed, like, this is a line of reasoning that I can understand and get behind and say, hey, optimally played League really is going to be different. And it's more early game focused because there's no other option than to play, you know, two item spike fighters.
And I think that is a little bit outdated now because we've already put balance changes in to adjust for this. I think that was true a while ago, but we've had many multiple nerfs for a lot of the bruiser champions that are being abused in solo lanes.
Sure.
And of course the, you know, discount price basically
for right, the 200 gold off
for mage mythics. I would also say that I think a lot of people forget some of the PoE games where he does a very good job of countering a lot of plays. Some of the TSM wins were purely off of him, you know, teleporting to side lanes or following roams or, you know, securing them a lot of these mid-game plays in the side lanes. And so I just think it's an area that he does get a lot of criticism for, but he actually puts a lot of work in to help TSM in those areas. And that's one of the reasons they ended with the most overall wins, because there were a lot of those one-off games.
I think the meta angle, which I'm sure we'll dive into a lot more after TL flipped their play style. You know, I definitely have a lot of strong thoughts on that. But for me, in the all-pro vote, that didn't factor into it that much for when I was debating between the two of them. It's actually that Blaze Olive just like was a good laner. He actually won lane frequently. Yeah. He actually led the league in kills for mid laners, I'm pretty sure, if I'm reading this right. Like, he, it's like, it's just, you know, things that you're surprised to see, like, oh, he's number 1-2 with PoE and DPM. And like, you know, he's not playing just control mages in the mid to late game that crap out damage. And he's got really proactive numbers in the early game about kills and assists at 15 and stuff, where PoE's at the bottom. Like, if I didn't, again, I didn't vote for him, but I actually thought there was a really strong case and it didn't hinge at all for me on, well, PoE doesn't play meta. You know, like, I think straight up, you know, he had a really good split for Blaze Olive, and I'm really excited for him in the future, but too little too late for me, man.
Yeah. So using gold difference at 10 for mid laners, Blaze Olive is third behind Zuke and perks. Yeah. And, you know, tends to hold on pretty well. Kill share is highest of all mid laners, even when he's playing things like Tahm Kench and whatnot. So, yeah, like, there are good things to point out and be like, yeah, this guy's really good. He's actually blind picked more often than every other
mid
laner.
Have we just convinced ourselves that Golden or Blaze Olive is the most snubbed?
Blaze Olive is, I'm just going to say, he was third in All Pro and he might have gotten exactly one All Pro vote. I'm just like looking at stats from, by the way. Yeah, he has the lowest counterpick percent of all mid laners. So they blind for him and he still has the third best laning stats.
What do you mean he was third in All Pro?
He was my third in All Pro. And probably is the only point he got from All Pro.
No, I think he must.
Maybe someone else has points in there. I'm just saying.
He's the most snubbed. I've talked to
him. I think he's great. I'm glad we're around on my side. Anyway, great. I wanted to bring that up.
Great echo chamber we have here for convincing you of that.
Thanks, Mark.
As far as, because I know this topic always comes up, you know, the coaching staff award.
That's always tough.
A lot of people have trended towards abstaining from the vote because there isn't as much
cowards
information.
If Azale was here, I'd call.
Now, I also have started to lean more and more towards that, though there are some things that you always still, you know, point to. And I think that, you know, Evil Geniuses and the climb that they made was definitely deserving. And that is further emphasized to me when I read and hear these interviews from the players like Jizuka, who has been so controversial and maligned by a lot, you know, gets flamed by a lot of public, you know, and very prominent public figures in some cases. And he is going to bat saying things like, I forget exactly which interview it was from, but there was this one line that stood out to me from a text interview where he's talking about the difference for him over the years of being in teams that had coaches with the style of my way or the highway, basically. And he felt like they were even pitting him against some of his teammates. But he said that Peter Dunn came to him this year and said, "You are not getting benched no matter what.
Yep.
You have the confidence to do what you are going to do. We fully support you. We are behind you." And that to me was just such a breath of fresh air as far as coaching style, especially for someone like this who had been through so many, you know, tumultuous, you know, getting benched last year, having this controversial play style, a lot of people flaming and coin flip and all that type of stuff, to go up and just give the player the confidence saying, "Guess what? We're all behind you. We're literally not going to bench you no matter what."
Yeah,
I thought that was a really cool strategy, and it has paid off so well. So I really think they deserve credit for that.
Yeah, I think for me, the coaching staff is split. Like you said, it's pretty obtuse. You don't really know what you're, what everyone's doing. There's teams that will just never win it, even if their coaches are doing great. Like Golden Guardians, as far as we can tell, actually probably have pretty good coaching staff. Yeah. I mean, Anero's generally done well with his rosters. He's just never salary-wise in the ballpark of the top teams. And if you look at placing versus salaries of these rosters, they actually correlate pretty well.
Wins per dollar is, I think like you or Travis have done that before.
Yeah, we've tried to figure out the wins per dollar. We've tried to moneyball and see who's doing the best, but like in terms of just raw standings and money spent, like all the top five teams are substantially more than as soon as you drop out of the top five. So, you know, there is obvious bias in how you're voting for coaching staff of the split, but for me, I'm just like, okay, have you improved? That's like the number one thing a coach is supposed to do is like keep the environment good, keep progress moving forward. People like Bjergsen could have won coach of the split for me. I think he was on my ballot. I think I did EG first. I think I did TSM second, and I think I did 100 Thieves third.
I had those three, and the first was the same, and then two or three, I forget which way it went, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was vote as you. Generally how I voted was just
the three
like...
three teams the highest records in summer. It's like pretty obvious to be like, yeah, they clearly did a good job.
And a lot of them, I mean, like 100 Thieves stumbled at the end a little bit, but you know, they changed one player, and obviously Abu Dhabi is great, but I thought that they seemed to start playing better as a team. I'm sure Reaper helped. There was a lot of praise from the players about Reaper at the beginning as well.
Yeah. Yep. Now, I know there's another thing you want to talk about, Freak, because there was a graphic on the weekend where I actually didn't even see it because I went to the bathroom and because we were casting.
Sure.
But played during the analyst desk with the, you know, Fake God versus Impact as far as achievements go.
Right.
And blew up quite.
So I'm going to set context as best I can without trying to strawman people, because I want to give this like discussion justice. And there's of course, nuance here. So this blew up. I believe it was initially from Doublelift's stream. So Doublelift was watching the game muted with his friends. I think it was Sneaky Mutus, but I could forget.
It usually is.
Yeah. And so he's just watching a muted analyst desk. They're just chatting. And then a graphic comes up that shows that, you know, Impact has done like these 17 incredible things, like winning the world championship, winning a bunch of LCS titles, a bunch of finals. And the other half is, well, here's Fake God. He's been to playoffs twice. And with no context, you're like, the hell is this? It's just like, why would you compare these two ever? And it's like, okay, well, this feels really unfair because people like tweeting about it. It went on Reddit. People who are like actual on-air talent tweeting about it. And it's like, are you really taking a muted clip from a broadcast and then complaining that there's no proper context? Like the context is people talking. As far as I can tell, that's like what actually happened. So I went back actually before this episode and I watched the segment. And so Gabby tees it up and she's like, the top lane matchup is one, and I'm like slightly paraphrasing just for editorializing. The top lane matchup is one we were coming into knowing that Impact was going to have the opportunity to really show out for his squad, right? That Impact's probably the better top laner coming in. And so then High takes the point. This is High's point. So it's why I think he's asking for the graphic. And he's like, yeah, Raz and I weren't very favorable for Dignitas solo lanes against EG. You can take a look at recency, like stats. But even outside that, you can look at their history as players too. Look at an Impact. Look at all the achievements he's accomplished compared to Fake God. Yes, of course, Fake God has a lot less time as a pro. And that's a giant mountain you have to climb to get to the starting point. This guy's won the world championship. He's won so many finals. It's really hard to amount or to surmount that and be able to beat it. So he's saying, hey, this is David and Goliath. Like, this is one of the, like, maybe the single most accomplished player to ever play in the LCS. And a dude who's in his, like, his second year as a pro. Like, yeah, this is really tough. And I know it's meant as a bit more pregame, like, to give extra context that I don't expect fans to get. There's very, very little preamble before the playoff matches start because we're going, you know, right at noon or right at one or whatever. And, you know, the lead in content is lane by lane or whatever else. So there's very little time to do a bunch of setup, which I totally get. That's going to make the broadcast feel a bit different. But The analyst desk has one segment between games. So it's both post-game and pre-game. Like, we didn't come out of commercial to the full screen graph. We came out of commercial to like a discussion. And then at some point, Gabby tees up to High saying, hey, we really expected top lane to be a rough point. And he's like, yeah, top lane's a rough point. Look how much pedigree Impact has. Of course, he's a really, really good player. So to me, like all that, like if you actually watch the broadcast, like a lot of these like concerns around like doing him dirty and not proper context, like are solved by just watching it itself. I'm not saying it was perfect, but I think when the argument is literally removing the context of High actually talking and Gabby actually teeing up the point, which is in and of itself context, is like shameful that people are using this.
So here is my take on it in the aftermath.
Yeah.
Because yeah, we were casting during it. I didn't see the thing before. My feeling is I totally understand both sides, especially because of the fact that the analyst desk does not get the big time before the match
like they used to.
Yeah. You know, to be able to set things up. Because to me, something like that can be used very effectively to set up a possible match. And is so much better before the match starts because you can set up the history and the history has meaning for achievements and leading into playoff games with more pressure and more rewards and everything mounting. That's kind of the idea here is that he has previously had more success, but especially as the series goes on, it has less and less of an effect of what you have done in the past.
Yeah.
And to me, it is all about what you do right now. And the point of something like this would be to set up, you know, before the game starts, the possible excitement of, oh, what if Fake God has a really big performance in this series? Or what if, you know, these things can go down? You know, this is, yes, a very tenured player. He's literally been playing since season one. He's got a world championship skin, you know, going up against the underdog here. But it does feel like in, you know, after a series has already started and after Impact's already winning, it doesn't have the same kind of, you know, effect to me. So I understand this angle as well from, you know, coming from viewers and stuff. The stuff about, you know, not having context, definitely, you know, if you don't have audio on, then you're not going to have the context and the point that people are trying to get across with it.
Go ahead.
Just as far as the placement. That's what
I mean, so that's the problem that you get into a little bit right now is I saw a couple people, pros and GMs and stuff saying, well, it should be in the pregame. And it's like, there is no pregame. So that is just not a solution. You can't recommend that. People haven't watched the show in the last month and a half. We haven't had pre-shows since week five, I'm pretty sure, around then. So that's not an option. The problem you run into is never talk about narrative beats that generally go better before pre-show at this point. Because that's kind of what you're suggesting. If you say, hey, it doesn't fit here as well. Well, yeah, it doesn't fit as well. But the question you have to ask is, should we just not cover him at all then? Because it is a very relevant point when you're looking at Dig or soon to be Golden Guardians and some of these other teams going up against the Goliaths is,
Hey,
it plays all of his perks.
To me, it's the, because you are moving it, maybe I feel like the value actually does drop off enough that it's not worth doing now because so much of it is about.
I'm just saying it's debatable, but that's what you're losing if you start removing these kinds of things is you'll get rid of most season and career narratives by focusing on what has happened this series so far because there's no longer a point at the start of the game to set context. So you have to weave the context in and you can say if it could have done better.
Maybe I'm making the case that that is probably the sacrifice, you know, that in the, that probably should be made here because especially for me, I'm always more focused on what are these players doing right now? What is going on in the game right now? What have you done for me lately? Instead of the long histories that have come into it. Because those are important in setting the expectations for the series and like explaining your predictions or something like that, right? And you can have all this stuff to go back on. But yeah, probably in that instance, maybe examine exactly what happened that Impact did in the top lane versus Fake God or what possible, you know, changes or choices could have made.
What I would say as well is we have four matchups this week, four matchups in the next week. None of them are getting intros. And I don't think you can take that approach, honestly, and cut out all context because it is relevant. You can say we got to find better ways to do it, but you can't, I don't think, do service to a lot of these matchups by not saying, you know, like what the history is. Like at some point, Perks is in lower bracket. already. We're going to have to talk about that on the AD, and it's going to be a little weird to bring it up in a series that's actively ongoing.
Post game one. Hey, yeah, remember this time that Perks won MSI?
Yeah.
After he, like, you know, beat a Blaze Olive in lane?
Yeah.
And we have to set context for, like, hey, you're in the lower bracket now. Like, yeah. I totally see your point, right? And I mean, thinking about, you know, things like Worlds prep and whatnot as well. It's like, yeah, the storylines get more and more focused the further you go on in a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, to Mark's point, it's like there is a solve here. And I can also zoom out slightly to move the topic a little bit, which is, you know, does this mean like LCS playoffs cannot be formatted the way they are? Because right now it's like we have things like lane by lane or next level or masterminds. And it's like, this is the 30-minute content that leads into, okay, it's noon or it's okay, it's one. And now the broadcast begins. And I mean, we got so many complaints earlier in the year, right? Where it's like, why are games starting it at 1:12?
Yeah.
It's like, well, because we want a pregame. I don't want a pregame. I want champs like the 12. It's like, okay, fine. And by the way, everyone like loves next level and masterminds replay files. Like, I don't want that cut for some pregame. So it's like, stuff has to fit somewhere. And I don't think anything is ever a perfect solution. But like, I don't want masterminds getting any shorter. I think that show's great. I don't want next level getting any shorter. That show's great. I don't want to delay champs like 15 minutes because I think games should start close to on the hour. So it's like, well, then at some point we talk about rookie Blaze Olive versus like 7X titleist MSI champion Perks.
World's finalist.
Somewhere that has to be, right? Somewhere that's got to show up. And that's sometimes post game one, and because it's still a relevant story.
Yeah, and especially if it is if it's a long series, sometimes people will draw on the experience factor, you know, as the series is going on, and so that can be something that you can draw on, especially, you know, if you're getting a game four,
But if you're looking at a 3-0 handshake, when are you going to work it in? You know, that was pretty.
It's worse after 2-0.
Yeah, yeah, it's worse after 2-0. That's the thing you're facing.
I think that's probably what a lot of people viewing are feeling, you know, where this is coming from, is that it's like, because they already feel it going this way, and they're like, whoa, don't kick him, you know?
Yeah, you're right,
because they already see it happening. So that's why
I see that.
Yeah,
I see that.
To Freak's point, that's why the context matters about listening to the clip. And I wonder how many people really did or just saw it from the co-stream.
Yeah, the Reddit clips on the Twitter threads.
It raised another comment that a lot of people started echoing as well, which is one that I definitely don't agree with, which is that, like, you know, you need to make all your graphics now friendly for muted viewing.
No.
And that makes very bland and generic graphics generally. And the one that I referenced is something that I think I was happy to talk about earlier in the year was a comparison of PoE's champion pool, to go back to this a little bit, against Bjergsen and win rates and just general quantity of games played on these champions. Yep. And if you just looked at the graphics without hearing me talk, you would have thought that I was just comparing Bjergsen winning more to PoE, which was not the point at all. It was just about play style of these players. But because you see the numbers and you see, oh, well, Bjergsen wins 65% of the time, PoE wins 53%. Maybe Mark's saying PoE sucks. And it's like, no.
No,
and that's
listen.
Like, you know, yeah, if you listen, you'll hear what I'm saying. And if you don't, you might think these are a little out, you might be confused, and that's fine. But like, you want me not to talk about this kind of stuff or make more watered down assets? I think it is worth talking about because co-streams are a new environment and stuff, but I don't think you should build your stuff with the idea that no one's going to listen to it.
Yeah.
Because then you're going to have really, really just like bland things that you're putting
in there. Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
I have a related point because I think it's a fun topic. I know we're diving into this a lot, but it's interesting because it's a fun topic.
We're broadcasters. We're talking about broadcasting.
Right.
What do you know?
It's literally our expertise. The idea is, by the way, graphics are a supporting element of the main broadcast. They are almost never self-sufficient, right? They're almost never the entire thing. So by definition, when you remove audio, when you remove context, like I'll use the top lane tier list from the middle of Spring Split as an example, where I had Fudge at second and most people had him at like ninth. And it's just like, wow, Freak is stupid. I'm like, how many people who saw the screenshot of the tier list watched the segment of me explaining what I liked about Fudge, what he was doing well, which was being an excellent weak side player.
In this new world of very big co-streamers that do not have the audio on, maybe there is a middle ground of being very careful when using just full screen graphics and literally having the person. So even if it's muted, I can see that Freak is walking in front of his list or something, or like pointing or doing something just, to remind.
Right.
But then you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, full screen graphics are off the table.
I think something
now
streamers can probably relate to a lot is getting clip chimp. Yeah. They might not realize it, but that's effectively what this is when you go on Livestream Fails or one of these other sites and you hear someone say something that sounds really ridiculous, but if you just let the clip play for 10 more seconds, they contextualized it well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's kind of what this is you're getting your clip chimping us. And, you know, it is what it is. It happens. And you can't, like, just totally try to dodge it completely, because it's yeah. going to keep happening. And it is what it is. And yeah. you explain yourself.
All right,
yourself,
well, here's another paddle
on.
Then.
Okay.
And, like, Freak, you can add on again. Are you, okay. you got one more?
It's a minor redirect, because it's another thing that's in broadcast. So when we do Worlds, there's the idea of there's the central feed and there's the regional feeds. And so some stuff goes mm-hmm. to all the broadcasts, like the player cameras, and most of the spectating is one general right. thing. And then every individual broadcast puts their stuff on top of it. It's their cast, their audio, whatever, but there's yeah. like, sort of a clean feed. And so the idea of, like, okay, co-streamers kind of need a clean feed in a sense, right? Where it's like, you know, what can we strip out from them? Because, hey, if they're not going to watch AD with commentary, maybe they don't get AD. Sorry, you got to fill the 20-minute between games, the 12-minute between games. You don't get the full screens because you're not going to contextualize them. Like, maybe that's just appropriate. It's not like, you know, you send the central analyst desk to the, you know, Brazilian Portuguese stream. Because, like, why would Shox be on that, right? Like, what's the point? Like, they're going to have their own AD. And it's like, cool, okay, let Doublelift do that. And then it's like, cool, you get the spectate feed. And the sponsor callouts that are required on the broadcast, whatever. And then, all right, go fill your 15 minutes in between, right? Take your own commercial breaks.
Watch Kitchen mm-hmm. Nightmares and
right, or you know, whatever it is, right? But you know, and you know, there's weird stuff around sponsor obligations and whatnot. Yeah. But okay, if you're not going to contextualize the clips yourself, then yeah, let's just not give you out of context graphics. Like, that makes sense to a certain degree, and maybe that's got to be solved in some way. But you know, this is literally stuff we do for things like Worlds and MSI, where the stuff that doesn't make sense for an audience just doesn't go to that audience. Even though there was a central broadcast, in a sense.
Okay, here's my new title.
Yes.
That came out of a great interview that Peter Dunn did. Is talking about the battle for the soul of the LCS.
Hyphy.
Yes.
Does this not sound like a great movie trailer? Da-na-na, season 11, baby. We're battling for the soul of the LCS. And it really took off. To me, you know, speaking from the perspective of someone who's been in the LCS since the very beginning, has seen all the evolution. And if you didn't know the context, he was talking about the battle between basically more proactive and early game focus gameplay and aggressive gameplay, rather than waiting and scaling the old, like, team fight, just have stronger laners and scale into late game, which has happened a lot throughout the history of the LCS. We have some of our most successful teams have been yeah. able to do that style, and that delineates some of these teams where you see it pop up in the records. When we talk about the teams that are the bouncers or the line or something like that, where they beat all the teams below them and then they struggle at the very peak, mm-hmm. that has been something where sometimes we'll send teams off to Worlds or some international competition, and they've been able to so solidly handle so many teams by just having stronger laners, then yep. scaling for team fights, and then winning that way.
TSM last year.
But then failing against teams that they have not played against before that have these aggressive looks and are forcing more things and are better mechanically and just have yep. you know, better players. I would say I fully embrace this conversation. Also, this is not the beginning of the battle for the LCS's soul or something like that. This battle has been going on for years and years and years. We literally, at the beginning of last year, before Team Liquid went to Worlds, were all of them stating, yeah, this is our whole game plan. You know, CoreJJ and Tactical were playing all these in-houses, and they were coming to LCS. We're like, we're going to 2v2 kill bottom lanes.
They were
at minute three.
In lane.
And they did. And they were
constantly.
Like, you know, Broxah was on the team back then, too. And he was like, yeah, we need to play more aggressively, all this stuff. And it didn't fully materialize. And so that's where we're back in this circle. And we're back at teams once again, all looking, oh yeah, we're trying to get to this golden pathway of the idealistic. We're literally just, you know, the most mechanically proficient and best players. And we play so proactively and we force all these fights. We gain our own advantages. That is always the dream. That is always the goal, I feel like, for peak League of Legends. Peak League of Legends is never the, we're just better, we'll just scale, we have stronger lanes type of thing. But that is a consistent style that teams will fall back on
sure.
when they're just trying to have good records for, you know, regional play or something like that, or, you know, there's some break point that they need to hit. We even saw it in the Team Liquid series when they yep. went up 2-0, like, you know what? All right, we're going to coast this next one. Draft a full team fight, not super aggressive.
Yep.
Then they dropped it, like, okay, well.
back to Renekton and Jace.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, a lot of thoughts on this one. Yeah. One, about TL becoming more proactive just in that series. Mm. Obviously, huge part of why they won it, I would argue, if you look back at
They were literally just playing way better.
Oh, yeah, they were.
Yeah, but I mean, Jensen on Lee Sin yeah. was something that looked like an experiment in the middle of the season. And then, you know, they
That's why you experiment. That's why you practice it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that last game or the third game that they lost, Santorum was on the desk and he's like, we just lost track of Thresh. I don't know why we didn't pick Thresh. they just trolled the draft a little bit on that one. What's also interesting too about the productivity point is that, like, I don't think people who just watch North America realize exactly what Peter Dunn's saying, who's much more internationally experienced. You know, I talked about this on Hotline League last week about TSM's productivity, because he was one of the teams he kind of was throwing this shade at about being, you know, fighting for the soul. And people were like, TSM's proactive. Hooney plays aggressive. Speak is all over the map. And, like, we're not saying they're not proactive at all. But if you look at their combined kills per minute, they are 0.71 at the end of the regular season. That was ninth place in the LCS, only faster than CLG, who can't get kills. And then when you start looking globally, they would have been the slowest in the LEC, I'm pretty sure. And I'm pretty sure they would have been the slowest in the LPL as well. And the only region that they're in the same realm as is LCK, which is a notoriously slow region. And so I think when Peter's talking about this kind of stuff and when people are talking about this, they're not saying domestically or whatnot. It's just that, like, when you go internationally, teams are going to scrap the hell out of you. That game that happened with just all the supports mid in that TL series is, like, crazy stuff happens. And if you're just used to playing this slow, controlled style, you're going to get hit by these curveballs.
And one of the little tidbits, too, that I thought, because he tried to follow up and add more context with a bunch of tweets, which is hard because of the limited text. And it's not everyone sees them. But he also kind of accepted the earlier premise I was talking about, that if you know, because of all this experience with the rest of the teams in the league, that you have stronger laners and you are the better team, that is a perfectly fine way to win games, is to go against, you know, this battle for the soul. But his aim was towards creating upsets in international play and reaching higher than you've ever been before. So if you're trying to break through a roof, if you're trying to beat teams that are better or insanely mechanically gifted and going to do this type of stuff, then you want to create more decision points. You want to create more variables, because the less variables, then the better team is just going to win. So you want to create as many extra ones as you can.
And, I mean, even to his own point, he's like, maybe we're worse than TSM and TL and the teams that he was listing. He's like, we might not even make Worlds still, you know? And he was just saying more like he just wants to push them to be more proactive, more aggressive, and, like you said, being willing to take bigger risks.
So, fun extra stat. So you use combined kills per minute. I'm just looking at total kills across summer split. TSM is also last place across all playoff teams. So, like, even Immortals and Golden Guardians, who won, like, about six fewer games each, still get more kills than their average game.
And people are always like, well, they're just playing cleaner, or like they play control mages that don't want a scrappy early game. And it's like, yeah, we understand that. That's kind of the point, is that is their style, is this way. And so if you play really clean games, yeah, you might only need 10 kills to close out the game. But that's a very different style than the team that's going to take 20 fights.
And they won exactly as many games as Evil Geniuses, who, you know, have like 20% more kills than them. So it's like, well, both styles got the exact same results in summer. We'll see how it goes in playoffs if they meet in the next round or so. But yeah. I'm a fan of the more aggressive teams anyway.
All right, boys. Well, we've got four playoff series this weekend.
Yes.
Four sets. So let's get right into it. Welcome everyone who skipped over the graphic and broadcast section and joined us for the LCS talk.
You should go watch it, though. It's good.
Let's start off just day by day, shall we? Yes. You know, Immortals versus Dignitas right off of the bat. This one, in the regular season, they were 2-1. So it was actually quite close. And as far as total summer record, they were also only off by one. So I'm pretty excited for this matchup.
Yeah, I mean,
even with Dignitas starting off with a little bit bumpy loss.
I mean, EG's pretty good. They were, like you said, tied for first place in terms of summer split record. So that's a tough matchup. And I think Immortals, to me, is such a hard team to pin down, because if you, like, break up their season into, like, different chunks, it's like, oh my God, they're one of the best teams in summer through the first 3 weeks. And then the middle weeks happen, it's like, oh my God, they haven't won a game. And then the end happens again and they're 500-ish. They're, even when you watch their games, their players are hit or miss. Destiny and Raze are sometimes, like, clapping super hard or getting clapped super hard. And it makes this series hard to predict for me, because I think Immortals, when they're playing well, looks better than Dignitas. But I would say Dignitas is generally actually kind of consistent. Like, I feel like that ever since they stabilized with Acadian after the swap and some of the stuff that happened with the mid laner, ever since, you know, like, week 6 or 7, they've looked like the sixth place team.
I was going to add some context, because for the 2-1 regular season record, the one Dignitas win was with the original squad with Dardoch and Saligo in there before those swaps happened.
You're right, it's doomed. Immortals 3-0.
My biggest takeaway, though, from the Dignitas loss to Evil Geniuses was actually, holy shit, Acadian is popping off.
Yeah.
He was playing extremely well, both just individually, but also to what exactly what the team comp needs, exactly what, you know, the game plan is there. You know, his Gragas games, he was facilitating extremely well for the team. He was AP threat. Yeah, I think he got the last hit and stole one kill from Draven later in the game when they were already, you know, fairly far down. But that was like the one small blip on the radar. I thought he was playing extremely well. And the bottom lane definitely had some decent looks throughout the series as well. It's just coming into this, it does beg the question as far as these solo lane matchups. These ones are much more manageable than the Evil Genius solo lane matchups. So that's why I think this series is going to be so much more exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a lot closer, but I still favor, I would say, most of Immortals against Dignitas. Like, if you look at the individual teams' records, for example, if you just look across summer, okay, Immortals only win one more game across summer split than Dignitas did. But there's always the asterisk with Dignitas' record was like, well, a lot of those games were back when Drotic was still playing. Like, they still had, they picked up where they left off in spring and were still like a top six team. And then their offswaps happen. Drotic gets cut from the team and Yasui comes in. Yasui is like definitively, it feels like, the weakest mid laner of every team in playoffs. He's like lowest in damage per minute. He's among the highest in death share. He has the worst laning stats. Like, he's gonna get there, but he's not there yet, right? I don't think he's a playoff level mid. Whereas Insanity, you know, again, he's not in my all-pro ballot or anything, but like, he's a reasonable mid laner. Like, I want to see Insanity next season. Like, I think he's pretty good. I think he'll keep growing. So like, I think it's still a mid diff. It's less of a mid diff than against Nezuke, but it's still a mid diff. I think Fate God is good. I think Fate God Revenge, if I have that right, or am I trolling East FlyQuest? No, but
you're right.
Yeah. But like, Fate God Revenge is like actually really compelling. I think that one's actually really fun. I think bot lane is also really compelling because I think Raze and Destiny have been quite good. If I'm going to like actually measure the players against each other, it's like, well, okay, mid advantage to Immortals, and then everyone else is really close. But in my mind, I'm like, but Immortals is like still like 40% the better team.
I think I would actually lean towards Dignitas players in a couple. I think it's close, like you're saying, in most of the positions. Actually, the biggest difference is in Dignitas' favor in the bot lane. I think Afro and Neo are actually just legitimately good bot lane. Okay. I think they have undue pressure on them to make plays happen sometimes, and Afro has to play an initiator, and anytime he's not on that, you're like, well, this just looks insanely bad. Like, him on Braum, he's a good Braum, but like, I'm sorry, you can't counterpick Braum Leona because you're just kneecapping your team's own ability, and that's what happened in the series against EG. They also have really bad drafts sometimes, like the all physical damage draft was, and I think it was game three, the Kindred game. Yeah, the Kindred game.
Kindred mid, yeah. As a Lucian counter, I believe.
Yeah, so I don't know. I feel like Dig has the bot lane in their favor, but I'm also just really concerned about
it. That was really interesting to me because the Immortals bottom lane, I feel like, is one of the most feast or famine bottom
Absolutely.
Lanes that we have. They have had literal record-setting pop-off bottom lane games where they win the entire game for the team. Yes, they're not consistent, and they've also had a lot of weak point games and have lost several of the games, but that makes it very exciting to me, and that's why I wouldn't, you know, feel confident for a series of being like, oh yeah, for sure, it's going to be, you know, generic bottom lane dominance there for Dignitas, because I'm always excited about teams that are willing to pick, you know, Draven lanes and teams that, go when Destiny has, when he's on with his hook champions, can secure them a game as well. So it definitely is a point of contest. I actually was most curious, though, do you guys think that the added best of five actually gave Dignitas an advantage? Because they're higher seed, so they get to start in the upper bracket. They get to play best of five. You know, this is playoffs atmosphere versus one of the best teams that we have possibly had for all of summer, Evil Geniuses. Because in the aftermath, Acadian had an interview and he was talking about, yeah, we need to work on this. We, you know, our communication, our game plan going in was not cohesive. I feel like that is something that having the extra best of five and playoff scenario and getting everybody in that mentality, in that mindset, in that atmosphere actually does help a lot and might hinder Immortals as far as getting a start in the series. So, yeah, you can get warmed up a little bit more. But I honestly do value that a lot as far as working out some of the kinks while you're rolling through a best of five series.
I mean, sounds like Acadian thought the same thing as well. There's an interview the day after that was on Reddit that he said, and this is just the quote, so I could...
Yes, yeah, so I was referencing.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I think it depends on the team. If you're a team that thought you had a good game plan, blew up, and now everyone's freaking out and it feels like you're on fire, that first series probably didn't help that much because you weren't winning it anyways. But, you know, if you're able to learn and have takeaways,
yeah,
you know, then...
And it could be one of those cases where you think it's blown up and you think everything's on fire, but it's just because you played EG.
Exactly, you played one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah, it's like, do you take it as, hey, we beat EG once? Actually, it's better than we thought, right? Like, hey, if we could beat EG once, like, we can clap these idiots.
It's funny because I talked to especially some of the coaches last year at Worlds, and they were talking about how demoralizing it was to scrim some of the top teams especially when you get further into the tournament and the team is like, do we want to actually schedule our scrim versus Dom 1 the day before we're about to play our elimination matches and just get slammed so hard that everyone's just demoralized and they just think they suck now? No. It's just, so a couple of the coaches were literally telling you, like, they have this strategy of like, all right, we're going to schedule some softball scrims versus like X Academy team of the region or that. Yeah. I forget what it was, but one of them even literally had them just go play flex queue and just like smash on some flex queue games. And I was like, yeah, we're so good.
I've told this story before, but in 2015 summer finals, MSG, we swapped our scrims, and it was kind of a scummy thing to do, but we swapped our scrims from warming up CLG to warming up TSM, because if TSM won, we got a free ride to Worlds. And so we scrimmed TSM. We're like, what do you want us to play? Like, what do you think they're going to play? We want to help be as good of a partner as we can. We play what they want us to play. They give us our draft. We shit on them so hard. I'm pretty sure they were tilted for the actual finals because it was, you know, 2 hours before they played. They wanted to get warmed up.
Yeah.
So there's
definitely
some truth
to that. You should have told your players to softball them,
yeah. We were trolling. We were like, we don't care. We already won our third place match against Tip or whatever it was at the time. So, yeah, we were playing free. We were playing loose. And we just crapped all over TSM. And then they lost the finals in 3-0. So, yeah, maybe playing EG was not great for Dignitas's mental.
It's an interesting debate. That's why I kind of posed the question to you guys, because
I think it really depends.
Theoretically think that it is better. Mm. But if there's a mentality, you know, there is a lot to be said for positive attitude and just you know, having confidence.
Yeah, to me, it's like I don't realistically expect like my match against EG to be indicative of my match against FlyQuest against Immortals. So like that's one I can brush off over the course of time. I think it is situational, case by case, which I think you already agree with. But it's like, hey, if you think you have stuff to fix, and so you come in working on that, and you're like, okay, we think we got there. And you play the match, you're like, none of that worked. Like, none of the stuff we thought we practiced worked out. It's like, okay, so do we keep going? Does it make me pivot? Because, you know, you have at least some more information to know, like, do we pivot practice in a different direction for the next week? But similarly, on the opposite side of that, you got a good scouting report. Like, hey, this is how Dig plays best of five. This is how EG beat them. How much can we replicate? Like, in the case of Cloud9 TL, like TSM is really happy about that match and Golden Guardian is really happy about that match. Yep. But also Cloud9 gets to be like, okay, now we can identify what to fix, but it didn't help them against TL, right? But you know, in a week's time, they can shore things up. But Golden Guardian's like, oh, cool, we got a playbook. TSM's like, oh, now we know what TL looks like. They look different in the regular season. So it really depends on what the teams do, right? TL looking very different. TSM really cares about that because now that match can look, you know, they can prep better. So it is really case by case to me.
Dignitas 3-1.
Immortals 3-1.
Yeah. I think Immortals drafts are better, and I like their champ pools generally, but I don't know.
I had Cloud9 3-1. I was wrong there.
I got Cloud9 too. I got that one wrong.
I became a really big Acadian fanboy, but
Xerxes is good.
Xerxes is very good.
Xerxes is very good. I think I might actually be swayed over to the Immortals camp.
Get out of here. I didn't want you anyways.
I want you though, Coach.
It kind of is, you know, also weighted by the extra data gathering that you're talking about versus Dignitas, because, you know, they did show, especially I feel like the Gragas was so big and being pushed that far, there are not a lot of surprises left, I feel like. Whereas Immortals, they can have so much stuff ready and with the flexibility of those players. I'm not going to go 3-1, though. I'm going to go 3-2 down the middle.
Coward.
Down the middle. Banger series, baby. Go all five. Silver Scrapes.
Great.
Next one we got lined up, though, for Friday. The other one got deleted.
Golden Guardians, Cloud Nine.
Golden Guardians versus Cloud Nine should still be an uphill battle for Golden Guardians, regardless of the water being sprayed across the table right now.
You want to see if we short circuit in a second here?
Oh, this is going to be exciting.
No, we won't, because it's on the other side of it.
Great.
Fine. Anyways,
the Licorice Revenge Tour.
You know, I saw you messing with the green cap for a little bit, and I saw that was unbottled and in my like, you know, uncapped, and in my head I was like, I wonder if he's gonna knock that over at some point. And
we need the Mark thought bubbles popping up.
When you were talking one time, you're fiddling with it, and I wasn't listening to anything you're saying. I was just watching you fiddle.
Honestly, yeah, because when you sometimes when someone talks for a long time, you're starting to zone out. We should actually fill in thought bubbles for the other members when we have like the two shot
I'm anytime it's you two, I'm off camera, so actually you don't even know what I'm doing.
Free's playing TFT.
Oh, I got my Hellions online. I'm pretty sure it's still
back to Golden Guardians though. They got a lot of data because Cloud9, they also showed the Taliyah, which was very unexpected. Not a lot of people using that. We talked about, we are super excited because it has had a good win rate for a while and can still be picked with things with point and click CC, but they got pushed to the brink and they lost. So you get the worst side of both factors we were talking about before. Yeah, you're a little bit demoralized and your opponent got more information on you and you don't feel like you worked any winning solutions out for your problems. Still, though, it's Cloud9 versus Cloud9.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I'm landing, whereas, like, you have a whole week, too. If this was, like, you played in old tournament formats where, like, someone can just watch what you did and try and instantly copy.
Uh-huh. They come up to you the next day while you're still kind of sad and depressed over there. And you're like, club you on the head real quick.
You're depressed. You haven't had time to practice new stuff. You just, no. I do think, like, the play style that TL did, which might be replicatable by Golden Guardians, is true in terms of blueprint. Like, Lee Sin mid or melee mids with... Sejuani jungle, like, hey, if I'm iconic and I get to play Sejuani jungle again, you know, like, I don't need to play really skilly matchups or something, you know, that actually does feel pretty good if you want to start taking some of what TL did.
Yeah,
but I still think the skill problems that we've seen out of Golden Guardians, the consistency, as much as we were talking about Ablaze Olive, he also died the most of any mid laner. he led the mid laners in deaths. I think he makes a lot of mistakes.
And he does. Team gap.
I think it's hard. I don't know if it's all team gap. In a 5-game series, if you're struggling with that level of consistency, it's really hard to win that many times.
I will chime in to say, I'm gonna chime in. Weird. Who would have thought? He's a good player, obviously. But I'm gonna. So we'll use data, and I'm gonna be very lofty about it. So we're gonna take very charitable views here. So Golden Guardians are getting underrated because of their year-long record. In this lineup, they are 6-6. They are 50%, which means they have had a better record on this lineup.
I think they've been celebrated a lot for that.
And that's good. But to be clear, it's like they have a better record than both Immortals and about Dignitas. So they should be considered the number 6 team just off of regular season. Like, if you're going to somehow truncate, you know, all the spots, they're actually
number
6.
You can take
them
at their peak.
Right. If you take them, just take them and across
in true freak,
this lineup.
True not
even
freak fashion, peak. If we remove the earlier losses that were...
like I said, I'm being very charitable, right? To set the stage for, like, what's the charitable look here for Golden Guardians? Yeah. They are the number 6 team in playoffs. They are seeded 8th, but they are the number 6 team in playoffs from the results of this lineup. Yeah. I think that is fair to say. Cloud9 just lost to the number 5 team from the regular season, right, from Summer Split with that lineup. Like, that is also a true statement. So, hey, what's one seed different? Now, this is a little XD, so let's push past that a little bit. Part of what got TL to do so well was, right, they had very little practice on that roster, so it got better quickly, right? What was the difference between week 9 and week 10, aka playoffs? One more week of practice. What's the difference between week 9 for Golden Guardians and week 11? Two more weeks of practice, right? Like, they got Licorice in for the last 4 weeks of the regular season, right? There's a lot of ground to cover. So they can heavily improve beyond that 6-6 scoreline because they've literally almost doubled their practice time, you know, since week 8 of the LCS. Whereas Cloud9's had this roster, okay, yeah, King was in for a bit, sure, but only 3 weeks. Like, it's not that unrealistic that, like, Cloud9 maybe aren't going to keep accelerating. They're not going to keep improving. Plus the playbook given over by the TL win. Like, it is reasonable to say, like, hey, if we extrapolate trajectories, maybe Golden Guardians really are in better shape right now than Cloud9. Do I fully believe that? No. But it's not completely unrealistic.
How crazy of a world would it be, and how big would the fallout be if Cloud9 actually lose this series? That would be just... Yep. Actual sky is falling right now for LCS.
That would be maybe the biggest LCS disappointment I can think of. Like, I can't think of a team that would be more disappointing compared to expectations. Like, okay, TSM at Worlds last year, biggest disappointment internationally. Like, you know, just hard stop. But domestically, how do you get this guy who's like, I'm going to win you 7 trophies, and you double, you lose the first 2 rounds of playoffs? Like, how do you possibly...
Yeah,
like there's no way.
We've had a lot of disappointments, so
I got one on the.
I don't
right
even
now.
Want to send my mind back through to sure. fact check you on
sure,
this.
Sure, sure.
Yeah,
so I'm not. I'm just gonna let you roll through. I'm not. Yeah. I'm not even.
So let's be charitable. Licorice and Fudge, right? Licorice at peak is clearly at Fudge's level or higher. Is he gonna play better than? Probably not. Is Iconic better than Blapper? No. Perks and a Blaze Olive have played actually. I would say Blaze Olive has had a better summer split than Perks straight up.
I don't even know if I take that clearly anymore for.
For jungle?
Because I think for the Fudge and Licorice one, because Fudge has been playing so well at MSI. Right. And
But, you know, they can play to a similar level. Yeah. I mean, Fudge got really gapped by Alfari, and to be clear, Alfari's, you know, also better than Licorice is, right? So, but, you know, that top lane can play close. Jungle. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, I thought you were saying it was Licorice. Licorice is clearly better.
Oh, that's not what if I said that, that was a mistake on my part. I would say Blabber is clearly better than Iconic. Unless he really chokes, sure. Okay. I would say right now, Blazol is actively a better mid laner than Perks. Like, I think I would rather have my roster today. Maybe not next year, whatever, but today I'd rather have a Blaze Olive. In the bot lane, I think 6A has been doing really well. Like, since the swaps, it's looked pretty good. Mm-hmm. I do not think pound for pound, Golden Grunions have the better lineup, but like their drafts can be better. They have enough players that can play better on the day. It is not entirely unrealistic.
If you're not predicting Golden Guardians after that, you're off.
I'm not.
All right.
I'm just saying it's not like the obvious 3-0 where it's like, oh, EG Dig is like the hard 3-0. And like, hey, good job Dig winning a game. This one is like, I'm going to start at 3-1 and then convince myself it's a 3-2.
Okay, there's 2 factors I care about for this series.
Okay.
One of them is the bad news bears attitude. I feel like really benefits you because Golden Guardians have suffered for so long. They've just been the bottom team. Everyone's making fun of them. They're literally putting out videos at the beginning of the season. We're broke. We got no money left. We lost all our funding. And we have all these players signed at, you know, minimum. And it's the land of opportunity that actually has had the fairy tale story start to come to fruition. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, the summer split record with this lineup and the improvements have been real. So, and we get this from talking to the players as far as the actual attitude of them of the nothing, we got nothing to lose, so reach for the stars type of thing. I feel like that attitude does go a long way. Plus, I just like reality television, so like the Licorice versus Cloud9, you know, vengeance match type of thing. If he would be the one to cause the biggest fallout and tack on another nail of this curse kind of superstitious, you know, cloud that is kind of building around spring versus summer for this team, like that. That would just be so much story. LCS is like, you know, we know drama, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think C9 are going to win. I feel like the...
Yeah, same.
Yeah, they had some issues. I think TL played really well. I think the Viego priority didn't actually help them that much. They started dropping it throughout the series, and I think the star looked better once they didn't try to hard force that champion, which is one of the best first picks right now in the meta. A lot of teams are first picking Viego. I mean, they're banning the power picks like Zen and other stuff.
Yeah.
And then you just first pick Viego. Yeah. And that's happened a lot. So I don't think it actually looked good for them. And that's why.
I think one of the big missteps was still flexing at 2 lane.
Yep. Yeah.
Especially in seeing the Syndra. And that was one of our biggest question marks that we talked about when we were getting into this game. We're like, okay, they're still doing it.
Yeah. We're like, they need an AP threat here. So they're going to get something from the mid lane. And then they're like, no. We're getting it from the jungle with Diana and the Viego's going mid into a hard matchup. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. And it's not like, you know, teams don't know Diana exists. Like, you saw TL through the ban phase left up the like second most popular jungler. Cause like, yeah, go ahead and play Viego mid. Like, we truly don't care. Take it. Yes. Like, we just think Viego's like only a jungler is what I could see from that draft, right?
Yeah. So I think a lot of the issues that I saw, I had a lot of issues with C9's drafts, minus that one third game where I think TL just trolled and forgot Thresh even existed because they thought it was going to be permaban the whole series. And so I actually feel relatively confident about them. They're still not in great shape. I don't. If you ask me if they're going to make Worlds, no. But Golden Guardians, I think, are going to struggle.
Yeah, I have a lot of confidence still in Cloud9. One of the biggest things from that series with Team Liquid is Team Liquid just played so well. They were executing incredibly crisp plays very early on in the game and seamlessly following those up with mid-game transitions and being able to flex to different objectives. Like, I just thought it was very well prepped and planned out by this team. And then to have that level of execution too, I wasn't surprised that Cloud9 kind of got bowled over. But to Mark's point, yeah, I have a lot of faith in this team to, you know, at least bounce back a bit here during through the lower brackets.
3-1
Cloud9. I'm saying 3-0 Cloud9.
3-1 Cloud9. I won't go to 3-2, but I wouldn't be. I mean, I'd be a little shocked, but.
All right. Saturday, baby.
Out of Thieves EG.
Two of the organizations that have been battling ever since we did, we changed the LCS format and brought in, you know, 100 Thieves coming in as this new brand and Evil Geniuses or apparel brand and Evil Geniuses coming in as the evil trash talkers.
Yeah.
They're just trying to crack through the old, you know, success stories and history of the LCS of always having the same teams winning. This is the season that they're actually doing it.
Yeah.
So I'm super excited to see, you know, which one can actually come out on top. 100 Thieves started out summer so strong, but Evil Geniuses seems now like they're having much more success.
Of all the teams that are favored to win the LCS, the other three all have titles. They all have at least four, actually, right? TLC9, TSM have eight. Something stupid.
I'd say these are the...
And these guys are both at zero.
Yeah. These are, besides the successors Team Liquid from franchising, these are like the franchising wild cards or whatever, the success stories that are...
And it's cool to see, right? They've done a really good job, both of them, at putting together really good rosters. Sure, I think the 100 Thieves scouting was pretty easy. Just grab the Golden Gutters from last year and then get a good mid laner for the summer split. And then here we are. But like, okay, cool. You spent for a good set of players with Synergy. You kept your top laner from before and you're ready to go. EG, obviously, you know, split over split, you know, huge upgrade. Like, they're just looking very, very good. Obviously, Danny coming in is certainly meaningful. He's a great team fighter, and that helped kind of round out the team for the late game. But yeah, like, EG are bracing their styles. 100 Thieves, like, clearly had their own kind of definitions with, hey, the three of Karma mid at the very beginning, and Abadaga looked like the best to call in the league. And then he's still moving around, finding stuff to play. He's one of the first players to, like, come back to Azir, and that still looked good as well. So it feels like 100 Thieves, every pivot they have made has looked really, really good. EG have very much stuck to, like, a incredibly aggressive mid lane, Impact getting much more aggressive himself, and that's worked really well. So both these teams feel like they have kind of carved their own niche, and that niche has led them to the best, you know, tied for the best record in summer.
All right, let's talk matchups. Bot lane's gonna get slammed. All right, 100 Thieves.
Yes.
Oh, for
lane phase, 100 Thieves bottom lane is gonna rip them up.
Yeah. I mean, so the thing I'll say is their bot lane has not looked as dominant as it has historically, in air quotes, because it's only been like a year with FBI Huhi, but they don't look as crazy dominant as they have. But I still think, given that this is one of Danny's only but quite significant weaknesses, is his lane phase. You know, down a lot of gold, down a lot of farm, dies in lane phase on and off. I think he, you know, had a pretty good series against Dignitas, but FBI and Huhi play so aggressive, and they're so much more lane oriented. We talked about how in that C9TL game, you know, the supports weren't bot lane at all. Huhi's actually one of the most or least roaming supports.
The man is an Aurelion soul main.
Yeah, he sacked.
He's
that.
Ready to go.
He got paired up with the FBI. He's like, wait, this dude's a beast. I'm gonna save him. I'm gonna pick Set. We're gonna slam lane. Like, they are much more lane oriented. And I think that actually works well, I think, into some of EG's playstyle about wanting to unlock Ignar to run around the map and Danny can go sit on an island. But it's a lot harder if you're getting perma-pushed in.
I was curious what direction you were going to go. I thought you were going to go a direction of like, oh, yeah, he's an Aurelion soul main. He's roam heavy.
No,
yeah,
he's not. He's not. Him and FBI sit in lane and slap your face.
Yeah, but I don't feel like it precludes them from using that strategy. There are a lot of times where...
I'm
not saying you are,
Yeah. Huhi does roam. I'm not saying, you know, I'm just saying that his generally how they play is.
And how they've
dominant.
Had so much success, which is why they have, you know, so much statistical backing for playing that way.
Right.
You definitely should. It's one of, if not their greatest strength. Yes, now they've brought in Abadaga. Him plus Closer have, I think, made each other better. People that are, you know, promoting Closer so much recently, they benefited so much this split from that synergy and from the change in the team overall, because, you know, previously it's not like he was this superstar jungler that was being held down by the team. I think he was also previously under
performing or performing poorly and has gotten legitimately better yeah. to the state that that has, you know, got 100 Thieves up, like you're saying, to the top of the league, battling where they are here with Evil Geniuses.
Yeah, I'm tunneled still specifically a little bit on bot lane. Mm-hmm. To talk about it, FBI has a 31% first blood rate. So he's, you know, killer assist on first blood in 30% of the games. That is the highest of any AD carry in the upper bracket still. Right, of any team who's actually doing well, okay, sure, they got to buy into there, but like he's, you know, past the other three up there. In terms of like golden XP difference at 10, Danny is dead last of all playoff AD carries. Like he just gets behind down there. And some of that is, you could say, oh, well, it's because the other, you know, Ignar roams out, but like, you know, he's down 10 CSD. That's the highest. He's, you know, down the most gold. He's down the most experience. Like, he's not even just like leeching a lane 1v2 where he's getting some XP. He's just like set behind. And his team fighting's great. He's making that happen. The rest of EG obviously do well, but to add some more credence to like, Paulin's going to get slammed. Paulin's going to get slammed.
FBI got 122 votes for first place AD carry all pro LCS team.
Mm-hmm.
Danny did get second place all LCS team. However, he got 58. So yeah. That is, again, that's another less than half of the points
right.
because so many people have agreed on FBI and the success that.
Yeah, I think there's no bigger gap in the league than the number one to number two position in any position other than AD carry. Even if, you know, we're talking about, oh, Danny isn't the second best, maybe he's the second best.
Yeah.
From mid laners
to tactical to whoever.
Yeah, yeah. But like in any position, like, okay, Impact and Fudge, pretty damn close. Alfari's in there. Mid lane, okay. Jizuke or Abadaga, you know, pretty close. Supports, close. AD carry is just a landslide in FBI's favor right now in the current landscape. Sven and his peak, Sven at the time, you know, other people could contest FBI, but right now he's the dude in the bot lane. So I think the advantages are going to need to come through mid lane, getting down there, actually. I would rather, I think EG don't roam bot actually that often, but I think when the enemy team's win condition is that, and is a team that likes to play really proactive, and they generally spread that around the top side of the map, I would actually like to see EG target bot lane a little bit more to stop FBI from just coming into every team fight up 500 gold on your AD carry.
Okay, now I want to play a game of each person lay out their strategy for this, because mine is a bit different, where for me, for early game, I would prioritize for Evil Geniuses. First of all, I would start actually contracts game one at least to wait and see how game one goes. But I would start contracts. I would have contracts play with advantage solo lane matchups, prioritize that for Impact and for Jizuka, and have him play aggressively to Impact at least until you secure first Rift Herald. At that point, use the Rift Herald, either top or mid. I actually don't even care which tower you chunk down, but use it and then bring Impact down to save the bottom lane then. I feel like there's a breakpoint then. I want to focus topside for Evil Geniuses, focus for their solo laners with contracts until at least first Rift Herald is taken. Then you can switch to trying to deal with whatever has happened with FBI.
No, I like that plan a lot. I think if you look at the TL game, game one, where Tactical was on Ziggs, and I was like, what the hell is Tactical doing on Ziggs? This is not what you expect. You know, Ziggs wants to take turrets, but TL didn't instantly go down there because they had Sejuani double solo lane on melees. And so Core actually left lane and they snowballed and got a lot of control topside. And then once they were winning in side lanes, it was a lot easier for Ziggs to move around the map. I think that general strategy is what EG should be looking to do, which is, yeah, you can focus topside and get Jizuke ahead and get Impact ahead and get these Rift Herald and stuff, but at some point you need to save bot lane. I don't think you can just leave it on an island. Sometimes, like, when your top laner is getting slammed, you're like, Malphite and suck it, bro. That's what you do. You just sit there and we're going to use you in team fights. I don't think they can do that.
So something interesting here, because I'm kind of diving through more granular stats. On red side, 100 Thieves plays a lot more around top lane. So looking at like top lane counterpick percentages, both these top laners are around 50%. Like, you know, half the time the first, half the time the second, whatever, to get the match they want. It shoots up for Sunday when they're red side. It goes from like 50 to 69%. It's still like only third around the league, but like it's still pretty high. His first blood rate like triples. It's 46%. So a lot of kills up there. And their win rate on red side is 85%. So 100 Thieves actually win a lot when they dedicate to, like, generally speaking, extrapolating a little bit, like playing a bit more around Sumday and giving him the pressure in counterpick lanes. This appears to be true on like first glance. So, you know, it's a team that can kind of go do both, that I think when they get Sumday a counterpick and they like volatile matchups up there, they're going to spend some time and hey, we'll see if Impact can, you know, play around it well. But like that actually has worked pretty well for 100 Thieves.
I think this just kind of backs up my strategy that I'm laying out for them, because I feel like right now it is so rewarding to play at least these first 8 to 10 minutes towards your top side. And it's further emphasized by the roster that they have, because that's where you can get the most advantages out of these players and in play into your biggest strengths. So I just feel more secure in my answer now. What about you? Do you have any tweaks on the strategy, or what would be yours that you would lay out for them?
Gosh, no, I'm really not sure. I think like prepping a matchup would require like so much more effort for me to like figure out what I would want to do.
Okay.
I'm not qualified.
We are casting their match.
Yeah.
So I've don't worry. Like I'll take care of that part. Yeah.
I've got 5 days to get there.
And I'm casting it with you. So
You're also the color caster.
Well, to go into Freak's point a little bit about the top side, I actually feel like, you know, that's probably maybe the second biggest mismatch in the series. I think Impact's actually played a lot better than Someday.
I think he's better. Yeah.
And Impact plays a lot of things that are just hard to abuse, you know, like he's playing Renekton, he's playing Set, he's playing Kennen, you know, he's getting these like either counter picks for himself or just playing generically strong champions. So I feel like it'll be hard for Someday actually if EG do get this snowball off on the top side.
Hit me with the prediction.
You know, it's funny. We talked to Santorin about this, and I was like, Santorin, who do you think is going to win? It was on after they won their series. And he was like, well, you know, if EG plays well, I think they win, but they're a bit of a coin flip. So it could be 100 to you. And I was like, dude, this did not help me at all. Because I figured you're scrimming them, you know?
Yeah.
I'm actually leaning towards EG, but 3-2. But I actually don't think it's a 3-2 kind of series. I feel like if EG's playing well, they might just be more of a 3-1.
David?
I think I lead 100 Thieves. I think I lean 100 Thieves 3-2, but it's really close for me. If EG hadn't dropped the game during the toss, I'd believe in them way more. But that was like so shocking to me. It's like, ooh, they're way more mortal than I thought. Because I was really hyped on them up until then, because 100 Thieves last week did not look good. They were, I believe, 4-4 at the starting roster in week 9.
The funny thing about that loss is that's one of those losses where I'm like, damn, you looked good losing. It's so true how they lost that game. They were up thousands of gold multiple times. They had the Baron. They think they're winning the series. They're like, just do the Baron. Whatever, dude. They lose the Baron. They still recover. They're in a 1-3-1 lane setup for no reason with an AD carry with no mobility and no defensive champions around him. And Dignitas just jumps on him and kills him. I felt like Dignitas were thinking of semifinals. Or excuse me, EG was already thinking of semifinals in that loss. And they still were clapping him for the most part.
I think that I am all put down right now still a EG victory. But... And it's a lot because even though, you know, one of the biggest strengths is FBI for 100 Thieves, Danny, despite having poor lane phases, the reason he's getting so many votes is because he still has incredibly impactful team fights. Mm-hmm. He still makes these big flashy plays towards the mid game as an AD carry, still is a very big bonus for this team. And I do have confidence in kind of the, at least the theoretical early layout that he set for this team. But if it goes the other way, then it just reignites this super hype for 100 Thieves as that they have been building all summer long and have you know, been gaining this momentum. If FBI is on top of his game, if he's crushing bottom and Abadaga, you know, performs like he's talking about, because he admitted on social media, he talked about, yeah, I've been underperforming. I'm going to show you in playoffs. I'm going to show you that I'm literally the best mid in LCS. So either way, we get a good story out of it. But I'll keep my prediction for Evil Geniuses. Let's move on to the last one. Sunday, Team Liquid versus TSM, baby.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
It's new Team Liquid, okay? This is not your old Team Liquid. This is not the Team Liquid your mom has at home. This is...
From last week? How did it change?
This is angry Team Liquid, okay? Yep. Alfari can hard carry for topside because Core JJ... 0.4% duo proximity in River Shen game.
Is there beef between Tactical and Core JJ?
That's actually really good.
That's good.
I don't want to lane with this guy.
But it actually wasn't even this time around so much top lane focus. He was mid lane. And it was all about these synergies that they're building in and playing around. Hey, Santorin and Jensen were just popping off all series long, especially with this Sejuani synergy with the melee champion. And this is the best... least in performance I've ever seen from Jensen. So I just feel like there's so much momentum behind Team Liquid having seen that series. Previous to seeing that series, I would actually predict, you know, TSM for sure. But now I'm switching my tune a little bit as far as how cleanly they executed on a lot of these early snowballs. And I'm not quite sure if honestly, it's going to be very difficult because Spica is definitely the MVP for TSM, and that's where Team Liquid are going to attack.
But Santorin is looking at peak form, right? TL did not have a top one jungler for the entire summer. And now they do again. Like, imagine 27 more games of Santorin. Would he just take all pro from Spica? I don't know. But he looked really good, you know, 2 days ago, yesterday, actually, in real time for us. TSM has a lot of footage out there where it seems like, I'm still going to say, like, my Aridus TSM feels a little one-dimensional, whereas TL reinvented themselves, at least, you know, the most sharply of any team over this last weekend. So, yeah, I think TL looked the cleanest. This roster looks very, very good. They have found a way to use Alfari's strengths. I know I've gone on record saying, like, he has strengths with big weaknesses, but they found a way to, like, use the strengths well to just widget the game. All the wins were sub 30 by getting 7,000 gold leads at 15. Like, cool. You don't need great late-game shot calling at that point. To just like close those games out of that point when you're slamming that hard. So, I mean, we'll see if TSM can keep up against the early pressure, but it just looks so good.
Yeah, I think TL sounded like they said we had a crisis after the last weekend and that how they approached that C9 game and they didn't like it and they did as much as they could to overcorrect. And I think you saw a more selfless Alfari than usual. Like he felt faster on his TPs this weekend. It felt like he was, if his team called for him, it seemed like there was a faster response. And I think that helped with this snowball that you're talking about where the leads were spread around better. Obviously, we talked about Jensen on the AD a lot being one of the least proactive mid laners and he's 11th out of 10 mid laners in kills and assists at 15. A lot better now.
Yeah.
The thing I'll say, though, is Perks kind of sucked this year.
Yeah, he did.
And I don't think PoE is going to get... He's not going to take that many losing fights in mid lane. There were so many skirmishes in mid lane. And TSM don't want to do this. Like, what does this look like for TL if the enemy team is actually opting out of these situations and not contesting you quite as hard?
If you're not auto-losing mid, which was the case in 3 out of 4 games, if you're not auto-losing mid, all your top dives are way harder. You don't away if you don't get a first blood as well.
Here's my two wild cards or fluctuation points for this series.
Great.
For the side of TSM, because it sounds like, you know, especially with the swell and the success that Team Liquid had versus Cloud9, there's a lot of, you know, momentum behind them. For TSM, I think one of the greatest strengths that is not talked about, because everybody talks about Spica, and that's valid. You can count on him. I'm on board with that. That's going to be big. But to your versatility point, they have actually had so much versatility just in Huni. They have played Nocturne top to the point where people are banning it even after it got turbo nerfed in lane. And dropped down like, what, 5% win rate, basically, as a laning champion? He still was effectively using it to the point that people were banning it against him. They went split push. His Jace, very effective as well. So he has had these Mundo early adaption, you know, looks as far as playing frontline, playing tank for them. Also split push for Jace. You know, all these different Huni quirks can, to me, be a fluctuation point for TSM, because I think that that is one thing that they have got a lot of wins throughout, just scattered kind of throughout the season, that that I would actually accredit to some of those changes to him. On the side of Team Liquid, though, man, do I like the way Tactical is looking. This man is going to demand Ziggs bans now. Mm-hmm. And that versatility on top of he was already performing extremely well with these skill shot AD carries like Varus, where... You know, he's pumping out highest damage in the game, plus landing them at key times for actual kills.
Yeah.
So I just think with Tactical performing so well and showing this look of, oh my God, all we need is Ziggs and we can do this super early game, you know, snowball a comp and then just execute all towers and move through. Plus he was okay to literally play solo by himself in bottom lane.
It does so much. Like that pick lets him play magic damage, weak side bot lane. Like you're not going to dive a Ziggs because he's going to have wave control. If you leave to go Herald, he takes two plates for it. So, like, you know, feel free to let him alone. And you can play AD top, AD jungle, AD mid, because you have a mage who's going to scale and get, like, it's actually the perfect pick. He hadn't played Ziggs the entire time all year long. Brings it out twice. Both of them look very good. Like, he seemed like he practiced it very well.
Yeah, he looked good in team fights.
Yeah. And if Tactical is playing the peak level, by the way, he has 11 solo kills this year, which is absurd for an AD carry, by the way. But he has 11 solo kills. Like, the man will... Like, if he's playing on form, we'll find those and like find those individual ones to go pop off and, I mean, literally solo kill someone. So, cool stuff.
I also think it's interesting where I wonder how much of the TL game plan for this weekend was in response to who they were playing.
Oh, I'd say like 90%.
Right.
Bold even was talking about it. It was like, go look at those games and you'll see where we came up with the plan.
Yeah, we figured it out. We watched Perks all year. You know? I feel like with tactical, being pretty good at laning and being very aggressive. I wonder if they go for a more bot lane focused approach. Like, if you're targeting a weak point on the map for TSM, it's
Lost
and Sword Art, right? So, like, I wonder if they say, screw the Ziggs pick, because as great as it looked, you know, that doesn't really get you advantages in matchups.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they would flip it around. Because,
but then you need more out of a far.
I think that what might be their downfall if they decide to do that.
I'm not saying they play slower necessarily, but I just mean like what they're playing.
I get your angle, and I also see the reason that might actually lead them to that. But I have had this feeling with TSM that people that have over focused on trying to get an advantage off of Lost have themselves just lost the game because of the Huni factor I'm talking about and the top side and PoE massive, you know, team fight carry. I feel like while Lost has not been the, you know, most giant reason that they win any of these games, has not been a huge, you know, like punching bag that people can get giant wins off of bot side from. So
of note, Lost CSD at 10 is negative. His golden XP difference are positive each. So, like, he'll go down CS, but then someone just dies in front of him. He's like, cool, we're good. Like, it worked out anyway. He roams to mid and gets a kill or whatever. Like, he's been okay in the early game. The side question I'm going to ask then is, like, which laning phase is more advantaged, actually? Like, bot lane against Lost or Alfari top lane against Huni? Because both those are going to look good in general. But Alfari CSD is probably going to be higher than your CSD over Lost.
Trick
like, it's
question.
Still the stronger lane.
Trick question. The answer is wherever CoreJJ is. If he if CoreJJ decides he's playing top lane, then it's top lane.
Game?
Okay. If he decides he's playing mid, then it's mid.
So Sword Art's very active too, so that'll be fun to watch. Yeah. Two more River games.
I'll go the other way, Kobe. Okay. I'll say if they try and play the same way against TSM they played against C9 and like snowballing through mid, it's not going to happen. PoE, other than that one Syndra game like a week or two ago where he just giga trolled and died like six times, he doesn't really int laning phases. Even when he loses, like maybe he'll die once and be like, he'll recover. So I don't know. I think that the
Power of Evil has the on aggregate golden XP difference is the worst of all playoff players below Yasui.
Sounds great.
So he is hard sacking lane. So the problem is are getting mid pressure. The exact like you're getting on average better laning performances than you were against perks. So it's going to look even more stark for the early game pressure. Huni probably maybe lanes a bit better than Fudge. Physically, he has been. Fudge has been a good late game. But it's still Alfari. He's still winning that lane. And you're looking even better when this dude's bringing in Victor. And like, I'll see level 14. Well, I'll see you when your Nexus dies. So like, if it plays to TL heights, you are like, this exact same comp, exact same strategy works.
21 deaths at 15 versus 10 through the same amount of games. Perks led the league in deaths at 15 amongst mid laners. So my point is that you scrap a ton mid to force the kills and explode the game open versus like, well, PoE wave cleared and like passed some waves up, which
it's a different, right. Yeah. In like game 1 and 2 or like 1 and 3 or something like that, we saw Santorin come mid and that worked well to get Jensen kills. But the other ones were like, Jensen just pushed and went top. It's like, cool, PoE wave cleared second. That's all they want. Like, that's fine. That's still the TL game plan. So through that lens, narrow as it is, the exact same game plan works.
We'll see what they do.
All right, predictions. Boom, boom.
3-2 TL.
3-2 TSM.
3-1 TL.
Man, you guys thought C9 was good? You guys were impressed.
I thought TL was bad. They got better.
Yeah.
C9 was almost a 500 record.
Like I said, before that series, before this last weekend, I would have predicted TSM.
Yeah, same.
They won me over.
On either team that went through.
Yeah, Team Liquid won me over.
But TL leveled up, it felt like.
All right, that is going to wrap it up for this episode of The Dive. Thank you again, Honda, for making it happen. Please remember, you can check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Anchor.fm. Plus, send us your Twitter questions using the hashtag, and our producer was very specific about this, TheDiveLOL. He did not like going to check for just hashtag TheDive. Yeah. It's just, effort, folks.
Call him lazy? Don't do that.
Especially with the Olympics, you know, sometimes you get some random dive stuff going on.
That was
on
a great hashtag the dive by
I really like hashtag the dive by, I don't know any of the
divers. That's why I went with the country.
And finally, give us your own takes over on Anchor, and we might just react to it here on The Dive. The second round of the LCS playoffs kicks off this Thursday. Thursday, remember, we have 4 days of playoffs. Immortals versus Dignitas at 3 p.m. There you go. Don't miss it. Freak's going to be there. Mark's going to be there.
I'll be watching.
I'll be there.
Good.
Live this or that. Actually, Thursday, live this or that Thursday, first thing.
Great. Masterminds. Another day.
Yeah, one of the days.
Yep.
I don't know which
Next
one.
Level also. The analyst desk, some casts. Mark Z yawning. So much content.
So much content.